What's it like performing with Cheech these days, all these years later? How does it go? How does the crowd respond?
It's so much fun. It is so much fun because we've changed so much. We're both old. It's like grumpy old stoners. He's writing his memoirs, and he's writing down stuff that, fuck, I don't remember doing that.
It's time for him to get back at you, right?
I don't know. No, Cheech has joined up. He's got his own strain out called Cheech's Private Stash. For real, yeah. And we're helping him with the strain.
So you're competing or you're working together?
No, he's working actually for us. We're helping. It's a funny story with Cheech because he didn't believe the pot thing was going to happen. You know, he smoked pot. He was like a pothead, but he was kind of wary about it. You know, especially when I got busted. You know, his biggest fear was going to jail. His dad was a cop, so Cheech was like indoctrinated into that cop mentality thing. And so I went to jail. I was happy to go, man, shit. Adventure, you know. Embedded with the troops, you know. And the reason I didn't mind going to jail is that I had a friend that we got into a little thing. He stole the car. And then we went on a joyride, and the car turned over in some water, and we all survived. And it was a real good adventure, except my friend got 2 years in prison. But when he come out, man, he was all buffed, looking good, you know. And I thought, fuck, I wouldn't mind doing that. And then years later, I did it. It was a trip walking through the gates, looking at the prison, thinking, oh, shit, it happened. But it was a great experience, you know. But Cheech, he's a little... He didn't want to go to prison, you know. And we got busted one time in Tampa for obscenity. It was when Jim Morris, when he got arrested for showing his wiener on stage, and so the hall had a $5,000 bounty. Like if you broke that rule, any obscenity rule in any way, you forfeited $5,000. But to make it real, they had to arrest you, you know, to make it like a real crime. And so Cheech and I did our act, and we got arrested. Part of the reason was we used to do dogs. Cheech would be a dog, I'd be another dog, and we'd smell each other's butts and try to hump each other, and the whole dog thing. And I guess... The cops, or someone, the hall owner thought, well, that's obscene. And so they put us in jail. And when we went to jail, at first Cheech was really funny. He was joking with the guards, you know, and making jokes. Because we just got off stage, and next thing you know, we're in jail. So we still had that comedic vibe going, you know. And the guards weren't laughing at Cheech, you know. They're just giving him that guard look, you know. Because to him, you know, Cheech is just another Mexican, you know, that got caught with drugs or something. So one time, this big redneck guard goes walking by, and Cheech goes, jail tendy, can I get some pink toilet paper? And the guard looked, just give him a look, you know, like, I'm going to remember you. And so then we thought we were going to be there for like, half hour, shit. 6 hours later, we're sitting there looking at each other. And so then it was time for them to split us up, you know. Now like it looked like we were going to stay the night. And so they took Cheech out by himself. That's when Cheech changed from being a comedian to be in a very scared little fucker. A Mexican that's in a jail with a big redneck cop and going up an elevator. The Cheech's demeanor changed quite a bit. He told me, he says, yeah,
First thing he said when he got in the elevator, you know, my dad's a cop. LAPD, yeah, 30 years, sergeant. So Cheech was always a little scared about being arrested. I was on the other, I loved it. I loved the adventure. I loved the people. Because I'm a people person. I study everybody. And everybody's got a story, you know. And if you're a movie maker like I am, you want to hear that story because you never know what you can use. So, like now.
All right, so we'll get back to talking a little bit more about Cheech in a minute, but we're going to go back in time a little bit and flash back to Tommy being born on May 24th, 1938 in Edmonton, Alberta, and he was raised in Calgary. So what was it like growing up for you in Western Canada?
It was interesting. It was fun, you know. It was... there's a John Steinbeck, Grapes of Wrath, you know, the 30s, the Depression, the Dust Bowl, and the wagons. Yeah. My earliest, well, my mother told me when I was born, my dad had got some homestead north of Edmonton, and he got it for a good price, I guess. And he was quite young. And so they moved out there, and there was no structure there. The only thing was livable was a chicken coop. And so my first memory, I don't remember being in it, but my mother, you know, and my dad, they cleaned out this chicken coop and made a home. And that's where we lived for a few months of my life. And then we had to move into Edmonton. I think my dad joined the army. And so moving from the chicken coop into Edmonton, this is my mother telling me this, that we were on a horse-drawn wagon with all our furniture and everything on the wagon, and we were riding on top of in the back, and we had a pet crow. My mother was very good with animals, and she had a pet crow, and then we lost the crow on the way to Edmonton on the wagon. And my mother she was a great storyteller. She's Irish, Scotch-Irish. And so she would tell me all these great stories about my early baby life, you know, my whole life. And my mother was she was very special, very beautiful. She was 5'8", dark haired, just gorgeous. And she came from a family of like 11 brothers and sisters. And she was the prettiest of them all. And then she got TB when she was in her 20s. I was about 4, I guess. And then she got TB, and so she was put in a sanitarium, and my brother and I were put in a home because my dad had some medical issues from the army. And so I ended up in the hospital because they did an x-ray and found out that I had pleurisy. And so the whole family ended up in the hospital. And that's where I kind of got institutionalized, you know, right from early birth. And then I went from the hospital into a home, an orphanage, a Salvation Army home. And my brother was there. He was 2.5 years older than me. And so he was going to school. And so he had to go through that whole rough being a minority, being teased, not only a minority, but a kid from the home. And the schools, they went to public school, but the school would embarrass the kids by telling the home kids, please stand, and the home kids would have to stand, and then the teacher would give them a pint of milk free, you know, from the government. And my brother had to endure that. And so he learned how to fight real early in his life, fist fight. And he was very tough kid. And I was the opposite. I was very experimental. Like, I learned about electricity. We never lived, our house never had electricity, so I didn't know anything about electricity.
because we lived in with a kerosene lamp and a wood stove. And so when I was in the home, I found out that if you stick a needle into the wall socket, you get a shock. And it'll hurt. That was my first thing about electricity. And my sister, we had a baby sister too. She was in the home too. And she was so beautiful because she was mixed. Like, you know, we were all mixed. We were brown. But she was especially beautiful. So she was so beautiful that the newspaper took pictures of her and being a tub and showing the home kids, you know. And she was the one that they used, my younger sister. And my brother, I would see him periodically during the day sometimes. And sometimes we'd go days without seeing him, seeing each other. But he always protected me. He kept me under his wing. And then we moved, after the home, we moved into the another house with no electricity, no indoor plumbing, outdoor plumbing, the outhouse. And that's where I grew up. That was my earliest, I guess age 6 to 13. I grew up like in that environment. And that's where I learned, how to love nature, because there were no parks, there was just the fields, and the fields were just filled with everything any kid would need. And then if you walked across this field, there would be a little foothills with some poplar trees growing, and that was the only tree that we could see about a mile from our house. And when I was a kid, I used to, my mother would pack a lunch for me, and I'd go off on a hike to the groves and climb the trees and just play in nature. And nature is so beautiful. And you learn so much. And that's the way I grew up.
So you got into music at a young age, right?
Same age. There was a fiddle player that lived across the field from us. And my mother had a, when she was carrying me as a baby, she bought a guitar, and she used to hold it against her stomach and strum it. She couldn't play it, but she'd just strum the guitar, and she never learned to play. When I got around 10 years old, I picked up this guitar, and I started playing, learned how to play it. I really wanted to play the fiddle, but my dad and my mom, they bought me a fiddle, but I couldn't tune it. But I could tune the guitar, so I ended up playing guitar with the fiddle player that lived across the ways. So I was 10 years old, and I was sitting and playing a dance party, and that's where I learned the basic music, you know. He taught me two things. He said, keep it simple and give the people what they want. That works for everything.